This is State of Water.
This is State of
this
Water.
This is State of Water.
This is State of Water.
State of Water coming at you right now.
State of Water, a podcast focusing on clean water issues and their relationship to policy, equity, community, and climate.
Featuring captivating interviews with Michiganders from many walks of life, State of Water is the official podcast of the Clean Water Campaign for Michigan, a program of the nonprofit organization Title Track.
Hey, this is Jenny from Title Track. If you resonate with what you're about to hear, put those feelings into action. Take the first step toward getting involved by going to titletrackmichigan.org/contact to sign up for our mailing list.
Welcome back, friends. Thanks for lending your ears.
We're excited to share this wonderful conversation with Araya Montero of Two Hearted Midwifery. Araya shares reflections on her deep connection with Lake Superior, how she chose to pursue the path of midwifery, and the power and presence of water throughout the birthing process. As always, keep your eyes open for highlight video clips from the episode on our Clean Water Campaign for Michigan social media. And if you haven't already, please subscribe and leave a review for the podcast and share with your friends. New episodes of State of Water will be dropping every other Wednesday throughout the year. All right, we hope you enjoy this conversation between Araya and State of Water host Seth Bernard.
Well, Araya, great to see you today. Thank you so much for making time for the conversation.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Awesome. Yeah, me too. And you know, the work that you do is so important as a midwife, and this is the first interview that we've done on State of Water with a midwife. And
cool.
So I'm excited to hear your perspective, but I thought it'd be cool to start out with just a little bit about your personal history, your own story growing up on Lake Superior and your relationship with the water.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Cool.
Yeah, Lake Superior is my favorite topic probably ever. I grew up in the Eastern UP on Lake Superior and had an idea that I would literally never leave the UP. You know, I was like, why would I ever need to leave? Like, I love Lake Superior so much that I didn't really care about the rest of the world, you know? And then learning about like climate change, and this was like in the era of people talking a lot about peak oil and how that relates to travel and all that stuff. I was like, cool, I'll just hunker down here and read about the rest of the world pretty much. Very Uper mentality. I think a lot of Upers never leave the UP because, you know, why would you? It's so great up there. Like, we never travel, you know, we did some traveling as when I was a kid, but going below the bridge was like a low priority for us. And so I actually never swam in Lake Michigan until I moved here in 2018. So Lake Michigan was never really on my radar. It was all about Lake Superior. So spent a lot of time kayaking, hiking, you know, swimming, all season swimmer. I started that as a young age of like breaking ice and trying to do cold dips. And always wanted to be on our calendar, our family calendar. We would always like write the first swim of the year. And I always wanted to be the first person. So there's a bunch of like stuff in my parents' garage that's like Araya's first swim, you know, like 1-1-2005. And it's just, yeah, it's really funny.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then I lived in Marquette for quite a few years. I was going to school there and then dropped out to become a farmer. And that's sort of when out of hospital, midwifery came on my radar. I grew up in a really big family. I always knew I wanted to work in midwifery or in obstetrics. I thought I wanted to be an OB at first. And then I thought I wanted to be a nurse midwife. And then after starting nursing school, I was like, oh yeah, no, I don't actually want to be in this system at all. Like, it doesn't align with who I am as a person and how I'm living my life right now. And so I just started learning more about out-of-hospital midwifery, home birth, and that was sort of my catalyst into that world. And I found a school on the West Coast that I decided to go to. And that was me like taking this very big leap and saying, okay, like I'm going to leave, and always knowing I was going to come back, like always having the idea that my practice name would be Two Hearted Midwifery, which it did end up being because I grew up near the Two Hearted River and was just so in love with that. Like any river meeting Lake Superior was an experience for me my whole life. I just always gravitated towards those like confluences, I guess, where the river and the lake would meet. And yeah, so I took that with me to the West Coast and, you know, cried about missing Lake Superior pretty much every day for the 5 years that I lived out there. Because it was, yeah, it's just such a big part of my heart. And I always knew I would return. And it was interesting being out there. Like, people who are not from around here do not understand what it's like to grow up on a Great Lake. You know, like, they think like cornfields and like a Midwest. And I was like, I'm not from the Midwest. I'm from the UP. Like, I'm from Lake Superior. So when people would say, like, where are you from? I'm like, ever heard of Lake Superior? Like, that's my homeland. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I can see Canada. That's the end of the UP that we lived on, you know? So it was, I felt like I was a ambassador for the Great Lakes when I was out on the West Coast. And yeah, that was really fun to teach people about our water and yeah, what was going on over here. Yeah.
So your journey becoming a midwife, I can't help but think about, you know, I mean, water is life is a common phrase that people hear. And obviously birth is life. And there is some of this idea of like, you know, water being this purely benevolent force, which it is, it's life-giving, but there's also an intensity to it that you experienced growing up, the winters on the shore of Lake Superior, the intensity of like being a young person going in ice cold water. And, and there's an intensity to birth. You're the bridge between worlds in some ways, a guide for people through the most intense and meaningful experience of their lives, oftentimes. And I have so much respect for midwifery, and there's a sense of awe that I have. And it's something that kind of happens kind of under the radar of mainstream society. Like, midwives are working sort of like day and night and just sort of tapping in and out of everyday life. Like, I could see you in the grocery store not knowing that you just came from a birth or you're about to go to a birth.
Right. I might not know I'm about to go to a birth also, which is like the, you know, one of the harder parts is the spontaneity of all that. I remember when I first started doing birth work, and it was in 2012, and I would literally go to the grocery store and I would look at people like, you don't know what I just saw. Like, this intensity of like, you have no idea what's going on right now. You know, like, after just witnessing something really intense. And now, like, after doing it for so long, it's not like, it doesn't overwhelm me in that same way. And that is kind of like my relationship with Lake Superior. Like, I mean, I will take her as in any form that she is, you know, like, I'm not afraid. I mean, I have a very healthy respect for birth in Lake Superior and, you know, obviously have a lot of safety nets in place. But I will take them both, however they come. And, you know, my mom always would say that Lake Superior's a bitch. She would be like, she's a witch, you know, she's Mm-hmm. She's really angry. And I would be like, I don't know if she's angry. Like, I'm not going to put like a negative. It's not negative to me. It just is. It's just like,
yeah,
it's just who she is in that moment. And that's okay. And in birth, you have to be, you learn to be very okay with whatever is happening, you know, in like the emotional holding space of like, obviously as a midwife, I have tons of training and lots of experience on actually like doing things when things need to happen, like handling emergencies, administering medications, doing that sort of the more medical things. But a lot of what I do is just going, yeah, that's really intense. Mm. It's really scary. You're feeling really like, this is really big. Mm. And that's okay. And talking to people prenatally, like, you are going to feel like this isn't right. There's no way that this would be right, because in my body it feels wrong. It feels, because it's pain or just this intensity that feels like you can't handle it, but it's actually exactly what you need to be doing. That's exactly what brings your baby. And a lot of people settle into that and they understand that, whether you can like, you know, articulate it or not, like you see that in people, that they're like, there's a lot of reckoning, because labor is very mental also, where you're just like going back and forth, like, my gosh, I don't know if I can do this. Like, you're constantly on the edge of that in labor. Most people are. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you just have to have a lot of trust that you can do it. You are doing it. And that's saying that a lot of midwives or people in the birth world, you know, like, it's not bigger than you because it is you. Like, you can get through this experience because you are this experience. This is your body. It's not like a outside force that's making these contractions, which we also call waves pretty frequently. Mm. Like, nobody is making this happen but you and your body and your baby. And so, like, your body doesn't do that. Your body, you can adapt to this. You can get through it.
Beautiful. Wow. And so, can you talk a little bit more about kind of your discernment and your intuition in finding your path? So you knew you wanted to be working in the world of birth, and how did you step into what you're doing now on the level that you're doing it?
Naively. I feel like everyone, you know, until you're doing birth work, you're like, oh my God, birth is amazing. Birth works. Like, all these very true and positive affirmations, like, which is, you know, leads people into this work of like being in awe and feeling really inspired. And like, I sort of, in like the climate change, the community that I was in, Marquette, was very like, what are you going to be doing when, like, for our community? Like, what is your role? Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to be the midwife. That makes sense. Like, I had already been feeling like I wanted to be doing that kind of work. And I was like, yeah, that's something I feel capable of. I'd been interested since I was a very young child. Like, as a 10-year-old, I was volunteering for breastfeeding support groups, because I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. Like,
wow,
breastfeeding, birth. I just was like obsessed, you know, totally loved that whole realm. And so it felt like, okay, this is how I will contribute to like healing our community and helping our community, or whatever community I'm in. And yeah. And then of course, like, actually doing the work, like, it's always nice to think like these really great things about what you're doing. And I have moments of like, okay, I'm doing great work. And it's also extremely hard. Mm-hmm. And yeah, but it's, you know, it's worth it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So your business is called Two-Hearted Midwifery, inspired mm-hmm. by the river.
Yeah.
And of course, the mother.
It's one of my favorite. Yes. Yeah.
That's really beautiful. It's such mm-hmm. a cool, It's a great name for any midwifery practice, but I love how it connects to your personal mythology.
So, yeah. I had always, when I was going to come back to Michigan, I thought I was going to go right to back to the UP.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, this will be like perfect. And then obviously I made a pit stop that has been like a long-term pit stop here in Northern Michigan on Lake Michigan. So, but I was like, I'm not going to, like, this is just who I am. And this is such a huge part of what I believe. And so I'm not going to, I don't know anything about, I didn't know anything about the Lower Peninsula. So I wasn't going to be like, change my whole practice name because of that.
Yeah.
Just fine. And now I know a lot more about down here, but
yeah,
I came in pretty blind.
So yeah. How's your relationship with Lake Michigan these days?
It's so good. Mm. It's so good. It's, yeah, I think I just definitely fell in love, Lake Superior is like the grandmother of the Great Lakes in my mind. She's dark. She's wild. She's unpredictable. You know, like there's just so much intensity and she's just so old, like that deep water, that cold water, that glacial water just feels like so ancient and old. And I know all the Great Lakes were made of the same water, but when I moved down here, Lake Michigan felt so tame compared to Lake Superior and so much more like, oh, I'm just a sweet mother. I'm just like a mama. Like, I'm going to cradle you in this way that is much more gentle and sweet. I mean, I feel cradled by Lake Superior, but in like a tough love kind of way sometimes, because she is so big and intense, and I can't hide from any. I can't hide from her. I can't hide from her at all. And Lake Michigan is just more like mellow and accepting. So I love Lake Michigan. We're good pals these days.
Yeah, good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear a little bit from you about the way that water plays into your work. Just like reflecting on, lessons from water. And and I know that some people choose to have water births. Obviously, water breaking is a very significant moment in the birthing process.
Yes.
So just, how does that show up for you and your like lifelong relationship with water as well, being a factor in the work that you do?
Well, the end of pregnancy is a very watery time, physically, like mucus. Mm-hmm. Breast, leaking from your breast, crying a lot. Mm-hmm. Like the late pregnancy, birth, and immediate postpartum time is like water everywhere. It's very, very, very fluid time. And that's how I talk to people about it. And people really resonate with that because they're like, I just feel like no boundaries, And so that's why a lot of people, right before they give birth, they really need to just like go into a cave and not isolate, but just like really turn inward, because they are affected by what's happening. And that's a labor too. Like, labor is affected by, like, if you throw a stone and the water ripples, that can happen with a labor too. Like, obviously I do out of hospital birth, but I see it a lot when people choose hospital births. It's like, interventions are disrupting this natural flow of a labor, which is not a, it's not a river that's like going one direction. There's a lot of little, fingers that come off of this river, and a lot of start and stop, and a lot of, a lot of just a lot of different directions It's just kind of a saturated experience instead of like a we're going in one direction the whole time. And some labors are like that, certainly, especially a second labor, or, you know, someone who's had a couple kids, like they get on the train and they have their baby. Like it can be a very like boom kind of experience. But a lot of them is just like moving slowly into that experience. And yeah, it's very, very watery. Some people choose to give birth in the water. A lot of people use water as a coping mechanism. So whether in the shower or in the tub, just like that comfort that it brings people, you know, a pool of warm water when you're feeling like you're dying can be like a little reprieve. And it also, what I see is it acts like as, well, it's literally a container, but it contains people so that they can kind of like get right with themselves, reckon with where they are in the birthing process. So if things are really intense, it might be like, let's put you in the tub. Let's try and slow things down. Mm-hmm. Let's try and give you a minute to collect yourself and meet your baby.
Wow.
Yeah.
And postpartum as well, very watery.
Oh my gosh, sweat, breast milk, blood, all of those things, tears.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a baby a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And I, in the postpartum, I remember every time I would nurse, which was, you know, every 5 seconds, I would like sweat from my kneecaps. I'm like, I didn't know you could sweat from your shins, from the top of your feet. Just the amount of like from every part of your body. You're like, what? Why are my toes sweating right now? It's just, yeah, everything starts flowing. Like when one thing starts flowing, everything else starts flowing.
Mm.
So that letdown happens. You're feeding your baby. You start sweating. Your uterus is contracting. Because as you nurse, it helps clamp your uterus down. So you might have a gush of blood. And then a lot of people cry in those first couple of days, especially when they're nursing. Yeah. It's just a lot of hormones going on. Just a lot. Yeah. You feel really thirsty, like this unquenchable thirst. Like as soon as the baby latches on, you're like, give me an ocean. Well, give me a great lake to suck down right now, because dang, I'm so thirsty.
Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. You lose all those fluids.
Totally.
Such a short amount of time, and here's this that needs you.
Yeah.
So
it's
this
like constantly replenishing.
Constantly, yeah. Mm-hmm. Forgive me if this has been a big topic in your life in the last couple of years, but as a midwife who's helped a lot of people with birth before your own birth, what was it like for you to, you know, shift roles from being a guide for others to being the one giving birth, and who did you work with?
Yeah, that's a good question. My God, everybody has to ask me that question, especially when I was pregnant. Yeah. And I was like, not a midwife. I was a mom. 100%. Like I was really worried about that. I was like, I'm going to worry about all these complications, all the like crazy things I've seen. I'm going to worry that's me. And I was like, no, I couldn't form a thought for myself, even though I attended births until I was like 7 or 8 months pregnant. And so I would sit down and have like conversation with the client. They'd be like, oh, I have this terrible heartburn. And I'd be like, here's all these things to do. And then I'd be like suffering with heartburn. I'd be like, I don't know, what should I do? And I'd call my midwife, who is my best friend, Britt. Mm. And she'd be like, all of these things. I'm like, thank you for telling me that. Cause there's no way, like you can't midwife yourself. It just doesn't work like that. Like you need someone to guide you through that. Mm-hmm. And even though I had been to hundreds of births when labor actually started for me, I was like, in my mind, I was like, nobody told me it was going to be like this. Mm. Nobody. I remember looking at my midwife. So I had Britt, and I had Katie Hobbs as my midwife, and then amazing doula, Kristen. Mm. And I looked at all of them. And I was like, you guys, who I'd attended birth with, all of these women. And I was like, nobody prepared me. Nobody told me. And I was kind of like an angry birther. I was just like, this is BS. This is so hard. This is so much harder than I could have ever imagined. And I need to take it out on you a little bit. So I was extremely unprepared because you actually can't prepare for an experience like that. There's nothing you can, you know, like it to. There's nothing that you can compare it to. And so it's a lot. It's really big and it's really intense. And I was never worried. I was feeling it all. I was not in my mind. I was not in my head thinking, ooh, is this about to happen? Is that about to happen? No, I was just getting pummeled by the waves, pretty much. Yeah. Getting thrown around. Yeah.
And your partner, your wife, Amy, is a hospice worker. And yeah. So that's a really fascinating combo to have a midwife and a hospice worker in the same household. Do you unpack with each other? Are there some like really similar experiences that you both go through?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Like, you know, it's a midwifery or life and death. You know, we try not to be that heavy in our house, but we have moments where we're like, oh my God, listen to this, you know, like this is so similar. Like this death happened and, you know, the way the family reacted, it's like family dynamics, actual physical things that are happening to people when they're birthing and dying are eerily similar. And the way that we care for them is very similar. Like in hospice, you know, it's a lot of that is being present with people in their pain, and you're not actually there to, you know, you're there to make them comfortable, but you're not there to fix anything. You're not there to treat them so they won't die. You know, you're there to just be like, okay, yes, you are dying, and I'm going to be here with you and try and make this as comfortable as possible, which is basically what a midwife does. You know, people are like, this is terrible. And I go, yeah, it's terrible. And I'm here for you. And we're all here for you. And you are the only one that can do this right now. And that sucks. And I think that's, you know, we save the same sorts of things as far as just acknowledging and holding space for people in that legitimate suffering, you know. There's no way to get around that. Like, that is not to scare people, obviously, but it's a lot. It's very intense and it's hard, and it's okay.
Beautiful. Let's talk about like preparing for a birth. Do you have like go-to musical artists that you listen to when you're driving to? What's your preparation? How do you get into the
middle? Oh my gosh. Well, it depends on the time of day and how far away it is. Man, there was one winter a couple years ago that I was listening to. I listen to like folky music a lot of the times on the way to a birth, you know, like, let me just cry a little bit. Let me just like get in my feels.
Get raw.
So get raw. Just like make it hurt a little bit. That's kind of my, what was that?
Like Nick Drake, Elliot Smith.
Like, yeah, sure. Nick Drake. Sure. Yeah. A little bit of that. Like Joni Mitchell, like Adrienne Lenker. I'm obsessed with her.
Yes.
Obsessed. Like, there's this band called Lomelda, I think it's called. I'll send it to you. Oh, it hurt. So good. Like Patty Griffin. Just like,
yes.
like take me out and just make me feel this.
Yes.
So it's either that or like, I mean, I've like driven feverishly to births in snowstorms listening to like NPR jazz on full blast, you know, or like funk, you know, I'm like, whatever. So
yeah,
those are kind of the things. Yeah. And then often if, when I'm going to a birth, it's like I'm kind of imagining the client and doing drills in my mind of like emergency. It's like, okay, like making sure that I'm thinking about my protocols at that time also.
Yeah.
In a very logistical way. Like, okay, remember how to treat a hemorrhage. Remember how to resolve a shoulder dystocia. Mm-hmm. Let me drill some neonatal resuscitation in my brain. Yeah. I have some songs that I sing that are, you know, that I've been singing since I started going to births that are just like reminders for me to breathe and not just think of it as a job. Think of it like I'm going to someone's house and they're going to be welcoming a baby, and this is a really big deal. Which, you know, I've that's easy for me to like really see the sacredness in it, and even more so after I gave birth, because every time since then that I go to a birth, I'm like, oh my god, I get to be that person for someone else that someone was for me.
Yeah.
And that was life changing. Yeah. To have people show up for me and hold me in my agony and my joy and my in my birth, just in that those huge feelings, and then I get to do that for someone else, just feels like I am repaying back, you know, the universe in some way for that experience that my midwives gave me. Which, you know, we always say like, I'm just there, right? I'm there as a safety net. You did all the work. You birthed your baby. I don't deliver babies. You birthed your baby. And having someone in your corner allows you, so having someone with that safety net allows you to be able to birth your baby in the way that you feel safe and held and seen. And that's not everyone's experience. Obviously, some people free birth and don't want anyone there. And I can understand that. But for a lot of people, it's, you know, we've been doing this forever. We've always been attending births. You know, there's always been midwives. And that's a special thing to get to witness for people.
Absolutely. Yeah. Our midwife, Kathy Mulder, who you know very well, it's a lifelong connection, you know, and that gratitude extends through my whole life too. Just that she provided support on that level in that space. It means so much, and it takes a really rare and special kind of person to be able to choose the line of work that you're in and to hold that intensity and that level of care in that space. And another question I have for you is, does the experience of the adrenaline of it wear off the more births you go to, and like, how do you recover after a birth? Maybe like an especially long and intense birth.
Yeah. I mean, there's always adrenaline because it's unpredictable. Like, you don't know, like you're in your mind being present with what's unfolding in front of you, and also needing to be on in a way of like, okay, I'm seeing this sign. Let me start preparing for this thing that might be happening. And so that's where like the adrenaline would come in, you know? The first, like when I was a baby doula, the first several births that I went to, I'd be like, I cannot do this. I can't believe I thought I wanted to do this. This is so intense. I can't, like, I'm going to freak out. I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot. And
I bet.
And, you know, now, obviously, that would be a very bad thing if that's how I felt now. But that wears off quickly because it becomes familiar. You're like, okay, this is it. I know what to expect in some ways. And I'm just going to be here for whatever happens. And, you know, there are those moments, like, especially during complications where I have this moment, like, I can feel myself somewhere back here watching what I'm doing. And I'm like, you are the one that needs to do this right now. And that can feel really intense to be like, all this pressure is actually on you to help with this complication. And there's no adrenaline. It's almost like a peace in that moment where you're just like there's no other, I've never been so present in my whole life than in those moments where it's like, do the thing in front of you because that's what needs to happen. So, you know, mostly births are fun for me to attend, and I don't cry anymore, you know. Not because I don't think it's beautiful, but because it's also like so normal.
Yeah.
And it's been so normalized for me. And I think that's a really good thing. And I think it should just be like, we should take it as a holy event because it is. And it's just like, it happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, this is amazing. And you're just an animal. Mm-hmm. You're just a person who just like, their baby, and that's sort of boring and sort of extraordinary, you know.
Yeah, it's nature, it's completely natural,
yeah,
and completely extraordinary.
Yeah, it's both and all the time.
Wow.
And then as far as like recovering, you know, eating carbs and sleeping if I can, which has been harder, having a kid of my own.
Right.
Going home and then having a baby that's like, well, she's not a baby anymore, but when she was a baby, who wanted to nurse for like 12 hours straight, and I'd be like, I'm going to die right here. Oh, I'm so tired.
I bet.
So
that sounds so intense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And as a toddler, it's probably... Mm-hmm. She's really challenging. She's wild,
right.
climbing now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a wild little one. She's really obsessed with the snowplow right now. So anytime like she hears like a loud car, she's like, and she runs to the window and scales the window and is like face up, trying to catch a glimpse of the snowplow.
Everything's so new.
Yeah.
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 Wow. Well, anything else you would like to share just about how water is showing up in your world these days, Araya?
I mean, no. I'm drinking some water right now.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Clink.
Well, thank you so much
for all right.
that you do. And I hope that the winter is kind to you and in the important mobility that you need to have to get to the births and to get home safely.
Yes.
Blessings.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And I am such a fan of yours and grateful for the work that you do, and thankful that you took some time to share about your life and your world, and blessings to Mother Superior.
And seriously, my girl.
Yeah. Grandmother Superior.
Grandmother Superior, yeah. For sure.
Ancient, dark, wise grandmother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's starting to freeze a little bit right now, which is
okay.
Very cool. That's what my parents are reporting.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Yeah. Thanks, Seth. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
State of Water is powered by the Clean Water Campaign for Michigan. This campaign represents an opportunity to help place clean water issues front and center by partnering with environmental organizations across the state, by educating voters, and by urging every candidate running for public office to make a strong stand on critical issues affecting Michigan's waters. Using storytelling and music events across the state to amplify the groundswell of public support for clean water issues, this campaign is driven by Michiganders from all walks of life who share a similar priority, protection of our water.
Both State of Water and the Clean Water Campaign are programs of the Michigan-based nonprofit Title Track. Their mission: engaging creative practice to build resilient social ecological systems that support clean water, racial equity, and youth empowerment.